So I want to say, Unity New York has the best music ever for Unity. Let's give everybody a hand. So inspiring. So one thing, I just want to make a little disclaimer I want you to know as you sit there. I've been in every one of your seats in terms of being a spiritual seeker and a student. And I have not written this sermon yet, but there's a sermon minister, a teacher, or do anything with the Bible. And so as I told the class yesterday, I said, so then I'm the perfect one to be called to teach the Bible to make it understandable and usable in our lives. So that's my blessing and my calling and my offer. So I just wanted to tell you that because anything can happen. But what I've learned is instead of saying never, I say it's highly unlikely that'll happen because it seems as I accelerate my spiritual growth, when I say never, it's almost delivered immediately in the form of let's move through this. So that's a tip too. And by the way, when I started in Unity in 81, and when I got to New York, I traveled to New York a lot as a designer, and I always came to Eric Butterworth, to hear Eric Butterworth then. So this has a special place in my heart, as well as all the students that have become licensed teachers that are here, and all those who seek to be, and all you who are being touched by our teachings. I greet you today. So I have a story about a young boy named Zachary, and tutors, flashcards, those special student centers, and they were just a little frustrated because they tried everything to help him enhance his math skills. So as a last resort, they enrolled him in a Catholic school so he could become more focused. And the afternoon of his first day, Zachary came home with a very serious look on his face, and he marched right by his mother without giving her a kiss, right up to his room. And when his mother checked in on him, she was amazed because he had all these books and papers scattered throughout his room, and he was just ardent in his studies. His mother was amazed. So she called him down to dinner, and the minute he was done, he marches back up to his room, and he gets at it again. He's up back to the books. So this went on day after day, and while his mother tried to understand all along, what was making a difference? How did he change? How was he seeing things differently? Finally, one day, little Zachary came home with his report card, and his mother was a little filled with trepidation at looking at it. He had put it on the counter, and she goes over, and she picks it up, and she was surprised that she went up to see him, and she said, Zachary, what is it? What is making the difference here? Was it the nuns? And he said, no. Well, then, was it the books? Was it the discipline, the structure? No. Then what makes it so eager for you to study in your new school? And he said, well, on the first day when I saw that guy nailed on the little cross, I knew they weren't fooling around. So it's a different way to look for Zachary to look at things. It didn't take much discipline. He just was really at it. So today we focus on a new way of seeing, and that song that was sung, Unwritten. Our stories are still unwritten. We get to change our thoughts. We've heard in Unity, we change our thoughts, we change our mind, we change our lives. And that affirmation, the way I see the world is, you know, I see the world the way I see it, is if I'm seeing horrible things and it's icky, who's icky, right? Who's icky on the inside? Whatever you want to replace the word icky with, right? So I'm going to talk a little story about a guy who's a character in our Christian scriptures, and his name's Nicodemus. And he was a holy man, and his entire life he had dedicated to reading and studying and unfolding the scriptures and the traditions of his religion. And he was an important man about town because he was a Pharisee. He was a leader in his community, and he was one of 70 members of this sacred ruling council called the Sanhedrin, which was the high court of Judaism. So Nicodemus, I'm going to call him Nick because I'm on first name basis now with him since last night. So Nick was prominent, and he was respected, and he was secure. He was the kind of guys you'd like to be, kind of guy you'd like to be in friends with, just in case you got in trouble with the law. So Nick was still, he was still wise, and he was holy, and he still had questions, even though he had all that holiness about him. Questions that no one had been able to answer. These were the big questions of life. And the questions nagged at Nick, and he longed to find someone who could help him find the answers. He had heard of a rabbi that was around town called Jesus. And he was a reputation, that Jesus, that he was roaming the countryside and doing things like healing on the Sabbath and interacting with women and talking to children and eating with tax collectors, oh my, all these things. So there were stories also of Jesus, get this, changing water into wine. We tried that yesterday at class, and we're going to have to work on it a little bit more. But it was his first miracle, and that was at a wedding in Cana. And then he also heard, Nick heard that Jesus was healing instantaneously right there on the spot. So people were coming in droves to find him, to see him, to learn what he had to share, and to be healed, quite frankly. So Nick wondered if Jesus would be the one that could help him understand or learn about these truth teachings and the questions that he had in life. But he was hesitant to approach Jesus. And there could have been a variety of reasons that Nicodemus was hesitant, not the least of which was his position. So what would it be, rules and regulations, and you know everything, and you're going to see this new guy, Jesus, the rebel? So maybe, on the other hand, he had an inner knowing that this was the person that he was to meet that would shift his life in some way. Not knowing how he could fully embrace it, but maybe I need to take a chance and meet Jesus. But, he probably said to himself, what if this changed my life? Have you ever had that question? What if I really, really committed myself to this path? What if I followed some of the recommendations of how to lead a spiritual life? What if this changed my life? And sometimes we have to say, so what? Maybe it would get better, right? We might see things differently. We might take a chance. And gosh, if you see that, you can always try it and go back to the old pity party life you might be leading, you know, if that's what you're trying to get rid of. So Nicodemus decides to, and he finds the place that Jesus is staying, and he barely taps on the door. And he's like, shh, don't cause attention here. I don't want anybody to know I'm here. And the door creaks open, and Jesus welcomes him and says, come on in, refresh yourself, and let's have some tea. So let's pretend they had tea then. So they were having tea. But Nicodemus was wise, and he didn't come to sit and drink tea. He came to get his questions answered. Now was the time. He had decided, I'm going to go undercover. I'm going in the dark. I want to see this guy and see if he has answers to my questions. And he blurts out, Rabbi, I've heard about what it is you've been doing. I have some questions. Where? Who do you come from? Big question. Is it God? And how else could you do such miraculous acts? Well, you can imagine Jesus preparing the tea, turns to him, and try and imagine the posture on his face or his body. And from what we know, Jesus was pretty centered. And Jesus says something that has absolutely nothing to do with Nicodemus's questions. He says, you cannot see the kingdom unless you're born again. Cannot see the kingdom unless you're born again. Now, what the heck does that mean? So you can imagine Nick thought, now, I didn't ask that. I don't see how this makes a difference, but Nick came for clarity, and now he's finding himself even more confused than ever. What is he talking about? So this news is mind-blowing, because he asks, how can anyone be born twice? And as he sits down, it takes him a little while to realize that Jesus is not talking about a physical birth. He's talking about a spiritual birth, a spiritual awakening, a new way of seeing the world and being in it. And as much as Nick was looking for answers, he's stunned into a new way of seeing just by being with Jesus and just by taking in this possibility that there's something more to his life than what he has right now. If Nick has been spending his whole life in search of knowledge, and in that regard, his cup runneth over. He knows an awful lot. But when he encounters Jesus in the darkness, he realizes that he must empty his life of that old way of being, of things that no longer served him, the thinking, the seeing, the stuff, if he wants to still that emptiness and that restlessness that resides within him. So when we look at that story, we are born again each time we awaken to the spiritual beings that we are, For we come, I see this wonderful baby this morning, and there's a couple of children. We come like fully packaged as whole children of God, delightful, all characteristics of God in love. And we just restore ourselves to that moment of our being, that we are born again and able to carry on. And it embodies, when we do this, it enables us to have a new way of seeing. So do any of you remember the writings of a philosopher, a French existentialist, Albert? So Camus was in the mid 20th century, 1950-ish. And he believed that human beings are utterly alone in the universe, that the immediate moment is all there is, and all any of us may ever hope for is right now. So late last century, at the age of 92, a pastor named Howard Muma, who was a retired Methodist minister, he wrote a book about his meetings, about serving as a guest pastor at American Church in Paris. And Camus originally came to that American church to hear the organist, Marcel Dupré, play concerts on the weekend, on Sundays. And then he started to stay for the sermon. And as he stayed, he realized he became a regular, not only at the concerts, but also for the sermons. And he met with the pastor, and they developed a relationship of discussing spirituality and the big. This piqued his interest. What's this Bible all about? And so listen to this, which is pretty profound. Camus said, "In the Bible, I have read about people who were not at all self-confident, men who did not feel as if they had the world by its tail or that they had all the answers. Fact is, one of the things that I have noted in the Bible is that many of its chief characters were confused, just like the rest of us. We are on a pilgrimage, and we are all seeking something, whether it is confidence or knowledge or something else entirely. I've read the Old Testament at least 3 times, and I've made many notes on it. In its pages, I have found some people who are absolutely confused about life and what they should do and what God wanted them to do." So perhaps the most memorable conversation they had was one afternoon. They were sitting together after a meal, looking out over the River Seine, and Camus shared this with the pastor. "The reason I've been coming to church is because I am seeking something to fill the void I'm experiencing. I am searching for something the world is not giving me, and I find it. I'm somebody whose worldview simply had no place for God." And as one of existentialism's leading lights, he had championed the notion that human beings live only to themselves. He would say that we are solitary centers of the universe. But Camus found himself captivated by the story of Nicodemus, who, like himself, was educated and a shrewd skeptic. He was a wise man searching for something that he did not have and did not know how to get. And like Nicodemus before him, Camus found himself asking the pastor, "What does it mean to be born again, to be saved?" And the pastor thought a moment, and he replied, "To be born again is to enter anew or afresh into the process of spiritual growth. It is to receive forgiveness. It is to wipe the slate clean. You are to move ahead, to commit yourself to a new life and a pilgrimage." The two shared a tender moment of being in God's presence. And they ended their time with Muma's telling. With tears in his eyes, Camus replied, "Howard, I am ready. I want this. This is what I want to commit my life to." Look at the strength of that conversion, as it were, of that new way of seeing. Sadly, not too long after that conversation, Camus died at the age of 47 in a tragic accident. But the story lives on as an inspiration to any of us who are seekers, who can let go of even the most rigid thoughts. For when we go back to Nicodemus, he was a Pharisee, the holder of the rigid thoughts. And in metaphysically in unity, when we are holding on to rigid thoughts or judgment, we are becoming Pharisaical. We are Pharisees, and it holds us back. And we like to look at it in terms of, who are the enemies in our household? Who are my own enemies that are holding me back from my greater good, from my way of seeing anew, seeing things differently? And when, for me, when I was on that side of not having the discipline to do the spiritual work that it takes to get onto the other side, to make this one step at a time, taking the tools we offer, one little bit of time with discipline and moving forward. And the glory, that kingdom that was talked about with Nicodemus, that kingdom that is within, is glorious. So after you've heard a little bit of today, do you think you can be born again? Right. Have you been already? Yes, right now. Again, it's moment by moment by moment. So if your evangelical friends say, are you want to be born again? Are you born again? No, thanks. Already. Got there. Right? And you can even do it again while you're standing there. Right? They say, are you born again? You can just be born again. I'm born again. And as I shared, or I'll share, that ends the conversation. There's no proselytizing at that point because you don't have to defend where you're at. You just are born again in spirit in your own way. So one of the most sacred blessings I have in ministry is to hold the space for and to stand witness to many on the path having a transformational experience. And that is the greatest glory. I wish this would stay still, but that's the closer to here. Grapple with the big questions of life. And I see you, the collective you, the unity you, embracing our teachings into your life bit by bit as you can, as you're guided, and then when you know the time is right, you break out, break through. And I see you accept your divinity as children of God, loved just as you are. And I see you wipe the slate clean of your past and implement forgiveness in your life continuously as a process. And I stand with you in the presence of God. And then occasionally the miracles of the winds of life swoosh in, and there is an aha or a transformation. And you know it. You know it in your body and your soul. And whether I'm there for that present moment or I get to see it after or hear the story or just see the difference and how a being can light up the world and transform their lives, it is the greatest joy. And it's not something I hold exclusively in ministry as a minister. We all can do that as the light that we are. And here's the big news flash. And when we're open and willing to let go of anything or whatever it is right in front of us that's getting in our way of our greater good. So friends, I offer you an invitation today. And that is to take an opportunity today or this week to be willing to open yourself up to see the world differently, to be born again in spirit. Be open to where spirit is really taking you. Let go and see what happens. Open your eyes to a new way of seeing. Thank you. Here is he.
Thank you, Jill. So it's time for our meditation. Let's get in our seats and feet on the floor, relax, take a deep breath.
So I invite you to close your eyes if you haven't already done so and just relax into your seat. Let the burdens of the day or your life, just set them aside for a moment as we commune in the presence of God together. And I ask you as we start this time of meditation, what is spiritual sight? And how might a different way of seeing bring us a sense of hope? So how about starting by embracing these moments of darkness that are here right now in this sanctuary as moments to pause and to realize that there's more to this than the darkness of any part of our lives or the world, and that we are the light of the world. We are the light of the world. We have that light within us to shine. So rebirth happens in spirit. And so if you think of, I invite you to think of, imagine, visualize wind. Spirit as breath, as wind, but spirit kind of gently brushing across your cheek or your hand. And you just feel a little bit of that wind. But in that moment, it's enough wind for you to become conscious of it, to become aware that there is wind. And then feel a moment where you're standing and the wind increases, the intensity of spirit calling you to commune. So in this time of silence, I invite you, whether it's through the wind or the light, to just focus on a still spot of spirit within you. Focus on the light, the love, and let it illuminate. Let this feeling of your communion, your personal communion with God, fill this room with light as we commune in the silence with God, the presence. I invite you to focus on that spot within you that is the light, a light, and feel that light moving out from you and radiating into this darkness. What a difference we can make in the world. What a difference it is in how we see the world. When we know that we have the Spirit, this God's presence, this light within us, and we can see. And we are grateful this day for this awareness, for these teachings, for this sacred spiritual community, for all that gather together here today, as we combine our single lights into one big glorious light. We are one, one presence, one power, and we say thank you, God, and so it is. Amen.